Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Can you believe it already? No, I keep saying it. January 31st. Heck, we're into February already in 2009. It was just last week. It was Christmas. And then it was like, oh, it's Thanksgiving. And now it's Super Bowl day tomorrow. Ooh. Well, of course, I'm betting on the Cardinals because Kurt Warner's an old friend of mine. Never met the guy, but I just watched him so much we became friends. And, of course, Matt Leinart is from USC, where I hang out a lot with Coach Carroll and everybody, the gang over at USC. So, now, last night, by the way, was Stephen Barish and Bella Bird. Bella Bird, would you like to say something, Bella?
Hello, honey. You say something? You say something? You say something? Oh, no.
She doesn't got to say anything. She's right here, though, on the microphone. She's not used to this microphone. And her boyfriend, who will be working the show with her, Buddy Bird, or Bitty Bitty Boo. Oh, I think I heard something there. Did I hear a little something? Did I hear something? Oh.
Did I hear something? Did you say something?
Oh, you got something to say? Oh, little birds. Oh, very, very tongue-tied. Anyhow, we were last night with, nice and sunny today. I think it's about 80 out or so. Anyway, last night we talked about Max Planck, the poor guy that really, he came up with the word quantum. Yeah, we talked to people and say, well, who came up with quantum? Well, Max Planck, by measuring packets of energy coming out of electromagnetic energy, which we call light or photons. And he called it quanta packets of light. And we talked about the Planck length, which was 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, which is just before or just as the Big Bang occurred, how small we were then. That's centimeters, minus 33 centimeters times 10. Ooh, that's a lot. Smallness. That's where thoughts start to manifest from, in physics anyway. And this today I'm working on Albert Einstein's chapter. But anyway, we've got a nice little ditty here for you. And Dr. Bell, are you queued up? Let's rock and roll. I think he's up there somewhere. I hope he is. Where is Dr. Bell?
Enzymes there also change polarity, because as the sun moves across the sky, so does the hydrogen atom change from a red on the proton, violet on the electron, rotates through green, which remains stationary, and then at sunset, red is over here on the electron, and violet is over here on the proton. So all the planes of consciousness, as they're coming through your physical body via the hydrogen atom releasing energy, they've all changed their polarity. It's like the whole thing has turned itself into a mirror, and it's looking back at the creation's looking back at itself. That's why you think way different at midnight than you do like when you get up in the morning. Okay, there's an entirely different thought process that's going on. And of course, if you were to relocate, if I were to move you here like I did last night out to L.A., you'd be like where I am at in L.A. this morning. You'd be adjusting your energy back, because my body is looking to see the proton and electron light relationship a little bit different time frame than it's used to. My body's traditional, like most people, so I have a little jet lag. Not a whole lot, but some. If I'd have gone from L.A. to Europe, it takes me a couple days to adjust over there, you know. Especially during the wintertime. Jet lag is a lot more severe in the wintertime because the light characteristics are different. But so this is jet lag until your hydrogen atom reacclimates itself. In space medicine, we had major problems. You know, you think jet lag is bad here. Where do you put somebody in orbit? What happens? Boy, do they have jet lag problems, especially when they come back. That's why they have in quarantine, medical, all that. They don't know where. I mean, with the first stage of the old program, they didn't know where the astronauts were going to end up. Some of them went crazy. Some of them survived. Some of them died. You know, there's a whole lot of things that happened to the astronauts over the years that have been on these programs. You just hear about the survivors. So all that, you have to take all that's a whole other story, you know. So then we go into enzymes, which is potential hydrogen, polarizing that. Then we go into vitamins, which we've talked about already, units of consciousness in the light. Then we go down to proteins. Proteins, we get into the amino acids. You probably all heard that you need 8 essential amino acids, right? Does anybody know why? Other than the fact that your body can't manufacture them, there's a big reason more than that why you need the 8 essential amino acids. Anybody got any ideas? In order to digest food, you know, I'll give you an example. When we go from proteins, which are amino acids, to peptides, they combine heavier and heavier down to hormones. Hormones are the first unit of biochemistry to possess consciousness. So when you get down to the hormone, if your activities are proper and your pHs are balanced and your electrical precursoring energies are positive, you'll produce positive hormones under stress or not under stress. If you're out of balance, your precursoring energies are more negative, you create hormones that are very negative. So when you get under pressure, you become violent. Okay? Unfortunately, our society under pressure is violence now. And so we're going the wrong way with our hormone production. And that's too bad because there's no way to reverse it. The DNA in most people is trained to produce anger hormones versus happy hormones. Very simple. Happiness and anger is a state of hormones in the body and how it works. So amino acids come into that because this is where the nuclear receptor really has a major role. Let's just say I ate a tomato. Okay, here comes the tomato. Okay, a tomato is a... Well, let me go back a step further, even one step further. And then I'm going to go a step further forward, and then I'm going to come back to this. I want to show you something else so you get a bigger picture. Okay, the hormones are stored in the body. Okay, they're stored in 7 different endocrine glands. There's 1 endocrine gland for each level of consciousness. That's why there's 7 endocrine glands in the body, because there are 7 levels of consciousness. Okay, 7 colors, 7 sounds. Okay, the frequency, any outside frequencies, okay, come into the capillary system, which is the hormones, and they cause the hormones to relax or constrict. Okay, if you get a lot of negative electrical precursing energies in, the hormones constrict, you have slow down of hormones. So this is more in women, it's irritability and PMS symptoms or something show up because of too much negative precursing energy down to the positive over a lifetime. Okay, so regardless of what happens is the hormones eventually end up at the brain. Okay, and when the hormones by vibration, whether it be good vibrations or bad vibrations, end up at the brain, and the brain, of course, has the 2 synapses we talked about, the receptor and the effector. So here come the hormones up to the brain, and the hormones are switching on or switching off electrolytes in the brain, which are then sending electrical signals down through the spine, creating the aura field. Okay, we see that. Now let me give you a specific example of how some of this works. And then I'm going to give you a specific example of toxicity. Okay, you breathe in a negative ion. You know, like at the seashore. Breathe in a negative ion. Immediately, the negative ion goes into the nose and stimulates the pituitary gland in the body. Okay? Pituitary gland has vasopressin. The hormone in that particular gland is called vasopressin. Okay? Vasopressin, if you were to look at it on this chain right here, it would have the enzyme B3 niacin, okay, nicotinic acid. It would have arginine down here, a protein, amino group, arginine, and lysine. Okay? Those combined with positive EPCs from a DNA level on an empty stomach when you eat food cross the blood-brain barrier, making vasopressin in your brain. Okay? When a negative ion comes in, or even a nice sound of music comes in, the vasopressin then leaves the endocrine gland, goes over to the brain and starts shooting off different synapses which send out electromagnetic signals out around the body deep into the DNA, which reaches into the astral plane, one level of consciousness above the physical, and brings out energy, euphoria, broadcast euphoria on this aura. As soon as euphoria is broadcasted on the aura, the cells feel that back into the body again, and you feel really good. Okay? Does everybody understand that? You breathe a negative ion, creates vasopressin from the pituitary, it goes in the brain, turns on the electricity in the brain shoots out the aura, creates a positive feeling on the astral plane. Because remember, the astral plane is the emotional body. The astral means starry, but when you look at the word emotional, astral plane is also called the emotional plane. Okay. Same thing with poison. What happens if I spray a bug spray in your face? Okay, bug spray goes in and it creates a negative hormone response and you feel bad. You feel your energy dropping and it stops the flow of vasopressin. You feel the opposite of euphoria. Okay? Over the period of 24 hours, your body becomes acclimated either to being euphoric or depressed. You develop mood swings. You know, you're either one way or the other, or you try to maintain a balance. Okay? Now we'll go back and see another area that happens. Oh, one other thing I want to say. The drug profession really got a hold of this vasopressin idea. Okay? And so the first thing that Sandoz did, they said, well, hell, you know, they didn't understand the stimulation side of it, but they just knew the chemical side of it. And they knew that when arginine and lysine and B3 were in your brain, you felt good. So what do? They take synthetic B3, synthetic arginine, synthetic lysine, they mix them up in a solution and make a prescription item called Diapid, which is a spray. So when you feel depressed, or your creativity and energies, you squirt this shit up in your nose, and now you have these hormones, but now you got a drug. Okay? So yeah, you feel euphoric while you squirt the Diapid up in your nose, but the problem with it is, when the Diapid runs out, you feel down again. Your body's now dependent on a drug. Okay? Then there's another way of doing it. Okay? There's another way to feel euphoric. You can go out and you can go to your local cocaine dealer and get yourself some of this really good Peruvian cocaine, if you could ever find it. Now, Florida, I guess, has better cocaine than California because it's all poison out there. So you squirt this cocaine up. You sniff that up in your nose, right? Well, it gets up in your nose. It stimulates the same section that the negative ion does. And then, bottom line, cocaine stimulates vasopressin back up on the brain, just like Diapid did. And it gives you some physical energy because it also stimulates norepinephrine. So it gets two areas stimulated, and up goes all this hormones to your brain, okay? But what happens when you run out of cocaine? Well, you need more cocaine, right? Because the body starts to crash after it wears off. But the problem with taking a cocaine in to stimulate euphoria is the brain, when it gets stimulated in this manner, doesn't use the hormones over and over and over again, okay? That's why in drug testing they're looking for hormones, you know, coke testing and stuff. So what happens with the cocaine, it depletes the vasopressin, it depletes the norepinephrine, and pretty soon the person has to take more and more drug to get less and less response until there ain't no response left. Now they go into severe mood depression, okay? Imagine what it does to these people that are smoking this shit, okay? Smoking this stuff. I mean, massive quantities of hormones are going up to the brain, and pretty soon that your brain is massively depleted, and you got a person, you got an animal. This cocaine has made you an animal. You got animals out there killing people just to steal to get more cocaine and try to get back in shape. So what we used to do in drug rehabilitation for cocaine addicts is we took and looked at all of the hormones that the cocaine depleted, and then what we did, we went out and got all the amino acids, and we'd make them take all these amino acids along with the enzymes so they could build their bodies back up, you know, and get them off the damn drug. That's what we did. Same thing goes with smoking. You know, smoking, you can treat people with Diapid for smoking, or in the case of smokers, we put lysine and arginine in our vitamins because you need a lot of it. But the big thing in smoking is B3, the enzyme B3. Okay? What happens is with B3 is called nicotinic acid. And what is nicotine? Okay, nicotine looks chemically almost like nicotinic acid. So when you smoke a cigarette, what happens is your body takes the nicotine in and uses it to combine with lysine and arginine to create a hormone, some kind of a synthetic hormone in your body that's activated every time you smoke a cigarette. Okay? So what we had to do to get people off of cigarettes is we put large amounts of B3 in their body. I mean, large amounts of B3 in their body along with vitamin C. And then pretty soon they're getting the vitamin C from the B3 from the nutritional and not from the goddamn smoke. And then the habit goes away. Okay? I stopped smoking in this manner. It worked for me many, many years ago. I presented this to the Schick Center along with using a pyramid because the pyramid speeds the process up. They tried it for a week up there and the guy says, well, we can't use it. And I says, why? He says, it's too easy. We'd go broke. Everybody would stop smoking in a week with your method. We got to have one that takes a couple months. So these are the kinds of things that we present with these technologies into people. So now let's go back and look at why we need 8 essential amino acids real quick. Okay, let's say we just ate a tomato. Okay? Now, tomato, these are all proteins. Okay? So in tomato, we'll have guanine, we'll have arginine, we'll have thiamine, We may have phenylalanine. We're going to have all kinds of amino acids in a tomato. It's a very good protein source. But tomatoes are also spread with arsenic. So we're going to have a bunch of arsenic in this tomato, too. You can bet on it. Probably 30% of that tomato's got arsenic in it. Okay? Now, here's the fun part. Okay, when this tomato was taken in, it would be called a left spin or lava rotary spin to the left. It's called lava rotary spin. So all these proteins are spinning the electrons in the left direction, the counterclockwise direction, right? If we accept the arginine down here, the arsenic. The arsenic is poison, and it's going to spin them to the right. The only exception to a right spin that's good for the body is vitamin E. Everything else is all left spin. A chiari, which is a poison from a snake, or arsenic, or any of these, or cyanide, all these poisons are all right spin. Okay, so this comes into the body, right? On a DNA level, the body looks at it first. Okay, inside the body are the 8 essential amino acids. In older people, there's 9. Younger people, there's 8. You know, there's a battle over this one. But we don't really care what the names of them are. What we care about is that we're dealing with the DNA. Assimilation starts on an electrical level, a DNA level. So we're looking at a frequency here. Each one of these amino acids has to generate a subfrequency to give us a carrier frequency of 3.58 megahertz, okay, which happens to be the frequency of this disc. This, by the way, in the body is right spin. All of the DNA inside the body in the amino groups, once they're in the body, are right spin. They're not left spin, okay? And so what happens is now the body is sending out an energy, 3.58 megahertz, which is a combination of all of these different amino acids in here. And it's looking over here, because if this is counterclockwise, this is counterclockwise, it's going to produce a force like that. And it's going to break some of this off if it's working properly. This is going this way, this is going that way, and it just whips it. Okay? So what happens is, this is an electromagnetic force in the beginning, and this is called messenger RNA, because it's looking at the viruses in the dipole of the different chains over here, this item coming in. Then what happens is, if this is a friendly fruit, it whips this off, which immediately splits this in half, and this comes whirling across over here at a high speed and vibrating, and this becomes transfer RNA. Okay? Then what happens is, as it whips it off, it reverses its spin, and it goes over here and combines over here. So we have more and more amino acids recombining again, forming what? A hormone. You see? So here we got proteins, amino groups, combining and becoming hormones. But the sad part of it is we have a thing called ELF. ELF. It's in all this room. Many, many books have been written on it. ELF disturbs this. And so what happens is, when this tomato comes in laced with arsenic, this 3.58 megahertz pulse in most people is confused. And so what happens is it takes the whole thing. So it brings the whole thing over here and combines it. So now you've got a toxic hormone. You've got a hormone here with a great big toxic messenger hanging on it called an antigen. Okay? And so when this toxic hormone with the antigen goes up to your brain, what do you think your brain's going to do? Fires off depression and destruction. And that's what's happening to 99% of the world, because they don't even know any better. That's what ELF does. It causes you to combine with poisons and create negative energies in your body. That's very important to understand. Now, how do you know if this is happening to you? Very simple. Go home and take an anti-antigen compound and put it in your body. What is an anti-antigen compound? Nicotinic acid, B3. Take a big hit of niacin. Take a half a gram of niacin. If you light up like a Christmas tree, it's because whenever you put B3 in this reaction, it creates what are called antihistamines. And so they dilate your blood, and all these antihistamines come out. Because you get a histamine reaction, and your body will turn beet red. All these antigens, poisons are coming out. And those are the killers that are killing you. Okay? So that's why the nuclear receptor is so handy, because what happens is the nuclear receptor blocks this energy and allows your body, your DNA, to run at the right frequencies. Okay, that's what these guys do here. As a result, when you wear this for a while, you'll be able to start taking niacin without a major reaction. Now, me, I'll tell you what, it's a battle. For a long time, I used to take 2 grams of niacin with my nuclear receptor and never get a flash. Today, I take only 0.5 gram of niacin, and I'll get a slight flash occasionally, and I don't even take niacin every day anymore. I don't have to anymore. But I used to have to take it every day for a long time to get all that. And the cell group in your body are called mast cells, where this antigen. And I'll bet you there's nobody in here that could take a gram of niacin and not turn bright red right now, because your bodies are full of that, unless you've been wearing one of these and taking a little bit of niacin for a long period of time. So that just gives you an idea of some of the stuff that we do. I'm going to skip down here a little bit. I don't have time to get into all of this stuff today. I'll show you some of the devices that we make. Okay, now here's one I want to talk about, because you've seen this all day long. Pyramid. Okay, now why do I wear a pyramid? Remember how when we were kids, we used to get on one foot, we'd get like this, and we'd hop forward. We'd reach down, touch the ground, come back up. We'd hop backwards. We'd hop sideways. We didn't fall over. Try it now. What happens is when you breathe in air, the air goes down into your lungs, goes through the heart, back up through very large arteries, 1/4 inch, into the base of the brain, which is called the circle of Willis. That's where the arteries start getting very small. The circle of Willis, which is entering all the blood from the lungs coming in, is a cerebellum. And what happens is, over a period of a lifetime, the cerebellum, with an artery of 1/1 inch, and the arteries coming in through the trachea of 1/4 inch, when you go from 1/4 inch to 1/1 inch, you've got a giant filter there. There's no getting around it. The base of the brain is a filter, and it filters off all the stuff that's in the blood. And when you immediately breathe in, you've got 700 enzymes in your lungs that are working in the red blood cell. They get blocked very easy, and so all of this stuff gets carried up to the cerebellum. What does the cerebellum do for the body? It's physical balance. So the first thing you lose is your physical balance. That's the beginning of aging. More DNA problems. Okay. As you get into your 30s, more brain pollution takes place. And now what happens is this part of the brain right here sends out the electrical stimulation down into the digestive system and the endocrine and sinal nodes. And as a result, your sinuses and your ability to digest foods is affected, because now the pollution has gotten up there and you start developing all kinds of allergies to foods and things that you could normally eat as a kid. No effect. Now you get stopped up nose, breaking out, hives, and all this stuff. Just further decay of the brain. So the simplest way to reverse this is to wear the pyramid. It vibrates all of that stuff out. And last cigarette I really smoked as a habit, I was 2 packs a day. I smoked Camels and Lucky Strikes. I didn't like filtered cigarettes at all because I couldn't get the hit of the nicotine. I was a major smoker. It was in 1967 when I laid my last pack of cigarette down. 10 years later, 1976, when we developed these pyramids at a clinic in Newport Beach, and another doctor started putting them on people's heads, and we didn't know they did all this then, because it was all done through, you know, doctor-patient relationships and time studies. All of a sudden, I put this pyramid on, and I got a massive headache from it. Okay, it was a silver radome at the time with silver in it. Started getting really bad headaches. And what happened was, I didn't know at the time, but we checked it out, all these nicotines and poisons that were in my brain for all those years, 10 years of non-smoking, were coming back out, because the next entryway, now we go from capillaries into what are called veins, because we're on our way back into the heart. But on the way back to the heart, we go down through the liver. So all this crap that was building up would go down into the liver and the bladder and the kidneys. So all this nicotine and this tar was starting to come out of my brain, was going there. And so when I go to the bathroom and urinate in the bathroom, brown urine came out and it smelled like an ashtray. This is 10 years after not smoking. And this went on for a whole year. I had to take a whole year wearing this damn pyramid like a dunce cap until I was able to detox my body and get all the tobacco. And I hadn't had a single cigarette in 10 years. Not one. Because when I quit all at once. It was the end of it, you know. And 10 years later, I had a real problem with it. So wearing pyramids has a magnificent effect on detoxing all kinds of things out of your brain. It has nothing to do with digestion, which is the receptor. Yeah. You smoke?
No, I don't. But what if you're in a room...
Secondary smoke. You need to get a pyramid on your head when you drive home, because what happens is secondary smoke gets caught up. See, your iron, you got your red blood cell is... show you a picture of one.
Sleeping under
one is very good. That will also detox you. It takes about 3 months. There's a red blood cell. It's upside down, right side up pyramid. Two alpha, two beta chains. Very sensitive. It electrically changes polarity. You know, when you breathe air in, it's got a valence. You know, I don't know if you guys remember your high school chemistry or not, but remember about valences and electrons changing orbit? You failed that, huh? Well, it's real simple. You have what in quantum mechanics they teach you shell levels. Okay, remember H2O. Okay, you have an atom of hydrogen has one electron, right? Atom of helium would have two. That's a full orbit, right? But hydrogen only has one. It wants that second one real bad, right? Then we have an atom of oxygen, right? Oxygen has its first two full. It's a real happy camper. But it wants to see eight. The next ring, you want to see eight out here. So the oxygen has six. So what's it going to do? It's going to grab a couple of these hydrogen atoms. It's a perfect mate. So we got two very active gases grabbing to complete a shell level or a valence level. So we have H2O, water, from hydrogen, which will blow up, and oxygen, which will supply the explosion, you know, the fuel, right? We're getting that second shell to fill up, because the rule is it's 2, 8, 16, and so on, each shell level on out, okay? So what happens in the body, in the oxygen right here, as you breathe in, you could just about consider oxygen to be O1, meaning that the way oxygen goes through the body, it really is lacking an electron. It's real active. So what happens is it comes out here in the air and grabs the volume of air. The red blood cell grabs the volume of air and carries it in to the cell. So when the oxygen comes into the body, it goes down to a cell. There's a cell sent down there with a whole bunch of carbon dioxide. So the oxygen is very active because it's a plus two. We have ferrous when it comes in. So it goes down there, and it wants to turn to ferric. It wants to oxidize. It wants to give off. You know, the red blood cell wants to give off oxygen. You know, like you take a frying pan, you get the rust on it, shine it up, stick it out in the air, and a couple hours later, it turns brown again. Okay? This is going on in your body. So what happens is the oxygen is coming down to your body, to your cells, and it sees the carbon dioxide down there. Oh, yeah, I need some of that to balance myself. So it takes the carbon dioxide out. And the oxygen, and so it comes back out and dumps the carbon dioxide out for the plants out here, grabs another load of oxygen, the red blood cell, and brings it on down in this process. Okay? This is an electronic process called the Bohr effect. There's an electronic process, and all the cells in your body go click, oxygen, click, carbon dioxide. It's a syncopated electronic switching effect. Okay? What happens is when you get secondary smoke, this is what affects more than primary smoke. Primary smokers are used to having a dull Bohr effect. Their Bohr effect is already sludge. But see, the person that's a non-smoker is really trying to maintain that high frequency of discharge, this ferric-ferrous change that goes on the enzyme level in the red blood cell. So secondary smoker, it starts to affect their Bohr effect, and it has, in some cases, a more traumatic, it traumatizes them. More than it physically damages them, like the smoker, it creates a trauma. Because the body is fighting to get this higher vibration. You know? You can burn sage incense in a room and people get high. Then you come in here and light up cigarettes and they all get low. The mood changes real quick. And all you did was change the flavor of the smoke. Okay? So that's what you're doing with secondary smoke. It manifests itself because your body can't maintain this delicate frequency of the Bohr effect. Okay? It's also affecting your heart, too. I don't know if you know that or not, but it affects your heart. A secondary smoker is prone to a heart attack more so than a person that's not getting that if they're traumatized. Okay? Because the Bohr effect in your heart is going click, click. So your heart takes in calcium, produces actin. Actin discharges like electricity and goes out. Then calcium, actin, boom. That's your beat of your heart. Okay? That synchronicity of the beat of the heart is also synchronized to the blood. The blood starts fluttering, the heart's going to flutter.
Well, we will now go to the other side of this. If you're enjoying it, there's always a little bit of something different in there. I listen to these things over and over again. I'm always remembering, oh, I remembered that. Forgot about that. You know how it goes. Anyhow, Dr. Bell, are you there? Let's continue on with this puppy here. Yep, we're waiting to hear from you. Takes Dr. Bell a few minutes sometimes to get warmed up.
This could create that, there. Too. This is where the receptor
there
comes
goes.
In. Helps balance all that out, these things. That's what these do, okay? I'm just showing you, you guys bring up some problems. Believe me, I've got testimonials by the score to document this stuff. There's the receptor. Of course, you need to be muscle tested to have the right gemstone. You know, you can't just throw it. You can hurt yourself if you put the wrong one on. You can damage yourself, with a receptor. They can be very destructive, so you make sure you get the one that's good for you. The diamond one is the last one you want to start out with. And I've had people want them because they can afford them. I've put diamonds on people, and they're sensitive to them, and they weren't the right ones. They just want them for their egos. And 5 minutes later, they're bright red. They're getting a full-on histamine reaction, and they haven't taken any niacin. All they did, they take the diamond off. They can't believe it's happening. How can this inanimate object make me light up like a Christmas tree? Well, I got people you can talk to that have had that happen to them because they wouldn't listen to me. And so you got to get muscle tested for the right one, because you can overactivate your hydrogen atom just as well as you can underactivate them. So you got a muscle test. That's why we will not sell these things without being tested. Then we have a thing called a nuclear disc. In the nuclear disc, you put it underneath a plate. It works like a receptor, but it works more like when you rub your hands together. You put it under your glass or your plate, and it balances the pH and gets rid of some of the side effects and toxins that the poisons in this food would produce. Then we have a device. We didn't bring any of this stuff. We have a device called a star orb. We saw a lot of these in Japan because the Japanese businesses over there saw what they do. These get rid of the effects of ELF. And what you do is you hang one of these things in your house, and you connect all your ground circuitry to it. I'll give you an example of how I hook it up. ELF comes in through the, and I've already showed you how it works through the digestion. The ELF comes in through the plug, okay? You got two things like this in your plug and a round thing right here like that. Comes in through there. So that's what you got to ground. So what you do is you have one of these things is that you go in the house and here's a room. Okay, this is your room. Okay, over here and in the wall, see, here's a wall plug right here. Here's a wall plug right here. Here's a hanging lamp right here. Okay? And maybe on this wall over here we got another plug. Okay, so on this here we got a TV set. Okay? Here we got a lamp sitting on a table. Here we got a hanging lamp. And let's say over here on this other wall we got another lamp on a table. And maybe we got a radio over here too. This is the radio. Okay, so we got all these appliances and we got this hanging lamp. So you go down to you turn everything on for that room, just that one room. If you're doing your whole house and you turn the whole house on, okay, you get everything running because everything has to be grounded. Because then you go down to your circuit breaker. Now most people, I think today, you have the switches. I don't think the old fuses are around too much anymore. So you got a circuit breaker. So let's say you got three circuit breakers here and you're in your wall box. But you're only working with one room. I'll even say four circuit breakers. So we go down here and we flip the first circuit breaker off. We turn that circuit breaker off. When that circuit breaker goes off, okay, the lamp and the TV set go off. So we know that's one circuit, okay? So then we flip the second circuit breaker, and then this other two lamps and the radio goes off, okay? Well, we don't care about these two circuit breakers anymore because we know these two circuit breakers, that's one circuit and that's another circuit, okay? But for the purposes of this device here, which we probably install over here in the room somewhere, we know we got two circuits here And if we take care of one circuit, and we still got one circuit there, we haven't done our job. So what we have to do is we connect a wire, we take a small little wire, and we run it over here and hook it onto the device. Just run the wire right to this device right here from that circuit. And we use, in this case, I just grab the lamp. I just take a wire and connect it right to the lamp because it's already on the ceiling. I just run a small wire over to this. Then we got the second circuit over here, all these guys. Okay? So we don't have to use all that. We just take one circuit. We go to one plug, one of the plugs, any one. It wouldn't matter because they're all hooked together. And we take that wire right there. We take a wire right out of there. We run the wire right up the wall over here, run it right in there, and hook it to this. Now we got that entire room wired into this anti-ELF device. Now we take a third wire from the and take it outside and run it. Maybe there's a window right here in this corner. We run it out through the window and stick a ground wire and hook it into the ground. Like a 3-foot copper wire or stake, you know, just put a stake in the ground, put this wire to it. It grounds it out. Now what happens is when you turn these appliances on, they're all grounded. Through the ELF device, all this ELF energy that's coming in from all over the place, from like radar plus up through the ground, all that is grounded out through the device because this will neutralize it. Okay? Big customer is Japan because we did research with Kawasaki over there. And see, in Japan, in their engineering departments, they have like a big room like this in this giant company. And the engineers come in and they have a project they got to do. And they said, okay, we got to create so much. You know, we got to design all this stuff. Okay? So what they did is we set these devices up in rooms with their engineers. And we set more rooms up with no devices in it. And the creativity of the rooms with these in it was way better than the ones without it because it affects your creativity right away. And they're sensitive to it. So as a result, we sell tons of these every month over there to Japan. These are made out of, they look like, they're made out of 24-karat gold-plated pyramids. There's one like that, there's one like that, and there's one like that, like that.
The metal is what?
It's a steel with a 24-karat gold plate on it. Okay? They only sell for a couple $100. We sell a lot, and it's about half the size of what you see in that drawing. It's about half that size is how big they are. We sell them all the time. It's called a star orb. That's a big product with us. This is a larger version of it here. This one here is for, we usually put these in bigger buildings. It handles more ground wires on it. You can hook like 8 or 10 ground wires. One of the first things that you're going to find out when you start checking this out, let me tell you, the first thing you want to ground out in your house is your refrigerator. You know, your refrigerator is an ELF box. I don't care if you just take this damn thing and stick it to you take your refrigerator, hook it to the star orb, and take the star orb and ground it outside. And if you're in an apartment, just take your ground wire of the star orb and hook it to a pipe. It's going to go to the ground. You ground out your refrigerator and watch what.
I guess that ends that part of it. And we're out at about 40 minutes, so that should be enough for today. Hope you enjoyed this little dissertation. But what I can do is put on a UFO panel to kind of cool the jets of the rest of the evening, because we got a little time left here, and I know you guys like different things, so I happen to have here a UFO panel will stick on as soon as I get this thing to stop and eject. And then a lovely UFO panel from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Changes and
right
how
up.
The extraterrestrials were connected with that. Now, I've never read a book on extraterrestrials in my life. Never read a thing on it. Never read anything on the Hopi prophecy. But I got the dictation. I wrote these screenplays. You know, and then I thought, well, gee, maybe I should like read a book or something. What do you think? What an idea. So I went to a 3-day conference and sat and listened for 3 days while wonderful people like these spoke, astrophysicists, astronomers, military, ex-military colonels. And not only did the fact that they were all pretty grounded people standing there talking about things that I already knew amaze me, but that I actually knew more than they did because I had been having these experiences. So about, I went back to Atlanta and started a group called the UFO Forum, which is a very left-based practical, informational group. We've only had one channel in 6 years. You know, I've really tried to keep it pretty based and grounded. We had Virgil. I haven't had Linda yet. When she comes down to Georgia, I'll have her. And after about 3 years, I had these very powerful intergalactic beings appear to me. That this is only 3.5 years ago, and they said, go get a regression. And I went and got a regression and began to discover what my own onboard ship experiences are. Now, when I speak today at 4, it's a lecture, and I have a workshop tomorrow at 4. I speak very much in these expos from what I call the right eye of Horus, grounded information, visually high intensity. I'm a photographer, so of course I have to do a great slideshow. I can't help myself. So I speak a lot about the true history of the planet Earth and the precession of the equinox, the age change, what has come before in the last 6,000 years, which you can document really well, what has come before that, which I don't get to spend a whole lot of time on because I don't have as much visual documentation about that, and what is coming for the future. So I speak a lot about the integration of who man really is and who originally seeded the planet extraterrestrially a long, long time ago. So we all have different specialties up here, and that's probably enough said about me. What I would like to do now, let's get a time check. Is it 1:05? Is that about right? This goes until about 1:45, and then Linda speaks and Virgil speaks, I think, directly afterwards at 2:00. He speaks at 3:00?
I speak at 2:00.
You're at 2:00?
My workshop is at 2:00.
Okay.
Across the way in the dining room.
Your lecture's at 3:00. His lecture is at 2:00. My lecture is at 4:00. Your lecture's at 6:00. And your lecture's at 7:00. This is, guys, we're just, open your brains. We'll just pour it in all day long. You know, you'll go home with thermonuclear brain meltdown. Why not? So what I'd like to do now, why don't everyone just get up and stretch for 1 minute. Stand up. Take a couple of deep breaths.
Don't fall.
Don't leave. Close the doors. Lock them in. The whole building's going to be picked up in a UFO any minute. Okay, that's it. You can hug your neighbor. Hug your neighbor. Let's see some hugging and kissing and sit back down. Okay.
Your brother's out of the service, isn't he?
If you'll take your seats, we'll start. Normally, we wind up passing notes up here when we have larger crowds, but this is a much more intimate crowd, so let's take some questions from the floor. Could I see some hands? Yes. Yes, what you can do, you can either specifically ask the question to one person, and they'll answer, and then if anyone else wants to comment, that would be appropriate, or you can ask it in general, and we'll see who wants to take it. So just stand up when you ask your question. You mean when you say, and I'm going to say this because we have a tape going and people, want to repeat your question for that. What she said is that in her experience, she always feels like she's the alien or the extraterrestrial. And how many of us have experienced that? If I can get a little clarification, are you saying that you feel different or you feel that you didn't come from this planet? Wow. So she just said that sometimes she experiences herself as a gray, and that sometimes when she looks at other people, she sees that as well. Does anyone wish to comment on that on the panel here? Virgil, you want to say something?
Thank you. What you said, I think, is very appropriate. Because I know a lot of people may have revulsions because you said you identify with the grays. And what you're saying and intimating, of course, is a profound truth. There's good and bad amongst them, just like there is us. sometimes the most bizarre-looking creatures out there that are most repulsive and incomprehensive to us are the most light beings and most loving and closest to God. So don't feel bad about that. Good.
That's really beautifully said. You know, the praying mantis beings, how many of you have heard of the praying mantises? Does anyone here know anything about them? Well, no, there's no way I can give you photographs. Stanton will just hate this answer. But, you know, this is a clairvoyant answer, and so let me claim it as that. When I read for people and I track them through time, sometimes, you know, about 50% of the time, I will see who their spiritual guides are, and they may be angelic, they may be a master consciousness, or they may be extraterrestrial in consciousness. So for many years, I wondered about the praying mantises. I had no information on them whatsoever, just didn't have a clue. And last year, I had one appear to me for the one and only time, for 1 hour. And they are a very, very ancient race. They come from Cassiopeia. And actually, they're pretty numerous throughout the galaxy. They're very peaceful. They emit a sonar sound which can either split a man's skull or calm the human nervous system. So they do not carry any weapons. Everybody knows this about them. They don't need weapons. And they're a very peaceful, ancient, dignified race. So, you know, that's a perfect example of what we would consider to be a large 6-foot-tall bug having a pretty developed consciousness. So for whatever it is worth, I share that with you. Anyone else? Yes?
Yeah, well, he's asking what my educational degree is in. I have one from the USAFA Institute, which is a master's degree, United States Armed Forces Institute. And I have another degree in homeopathic medicine. Okay?
And now you.
Thank you, Fred. It'd be pretty lengthy to go into detail on that, but as I've already explained, as a young officer in the Army, as a UFO, G2 air, specialist, which meant that all air intelligence, of course, came across my desk. We received the TWIX. I was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina at the time, on an assignment with the Air Force, and from the commanding general of the Air Force received the TWIX that an unidentified flying object had landed at White Sands, New Mexico. And, of course, that's the first time I'd ever heard about a UFO. I was fortunate enough, of course, to follow through on it from the very concept to the end. Basically, it was a ship 100 foot in diameter. It had 5 beings aboard, all diminutive. 3.5 average was the height of them. One of them was just under 4 feet. He obviously was a commander. He had epaulets on his shoulders, as did one of the lesser ones. The bodies, of course, anatomically were very much like ours. They were humanoid, if you will, diminutive, but with 4 fingers and 4 toes as opposed to our 5 digits. Hairless, alabaster white, their skin was alabaster white, although there was an incongruity in that their faces were purple and red and yellow, quite a contrast from their alabaster white skin. But we discovered later on that it had blown a portal and they had suffocated. Of course, strangulation had caused the discoloration in the face. Those bodies, of course, were taken back to Wright-Patterson, the newly established headquarters of the Air Force then. And as far as I know, they're still there. They found out that through the autopsy that they were very humanoid in nature. In other words, but everything was in a state of atrophy. In other words, like kidneys and or the liver and things like this, the remnants were there, but they were no longer functional, and they obviously were on a higher degree or a different system than our own. It was surmised, too, that they spoke telepathically because the mouth was fixed. The eyes were large and luminous and quite beautiful. No ears, no nose. They were also in a state of atrophy. So that's just a quick highlight. Incidentally, the ship was taken over land at night, cross country, one of the most remarkable feats the American government has ever pulled, you know. And I've interviewed no few of people who were actually in on that during the process of taking it from White Sands to Wright-Patterson, Ohio. A phenomenon.
There must be There must be 100 people you worked with that could verify all this or get further information.
Well, they're reluctant to, the question or answer was, there must be 100 people that I've worked with that know about this, and indeed there is. But they've been reluctant to step forward and compromise themselves. I think I demonstrated in 1980 when I took the government, confronted the government, that we can survive, and of course many more have followed my steps then, and it's time. And I'll say to you and the whole audience, you know, this year you're going to see mass showings and mass landings of UFOs. Last year, October last year, in my hometown, Sedona, Arizona, one of the major underground bases, extraterrestrial and governmental controlled, was closed due to the intervention of the forces of light or the forces of the Christ, you know. We actually had a confrontation over Sedona where an F-16 was shot down in broad daylight. The ship, the adversarial ship, in other words, the Guardian Force ship, which was a UFO, tried to elude and avoid the confrontation, but at the last minute, the F-16, apparently under orders, went directly for it, and it zapped it, and of course, it fell down to the earth a few miles from where I live. Within 24 hours, Senator Dole, the head of the CIA, the FBI, and everybody else was there, and Sedona was cordoned off for about 48 hours. And so there was the first, you might say, broadcast of the intervention of the forces of light and the good guys. They're here. And I have an idea we might have one or two here in the audience, this extraterrestrial over here. Any other extraterrestrials here? You say, look at that. That's good. Believe it. You're all extraterrestrials. Thank you.
Oh, I'd like... Right, he's an Earth man and a good one, too. I'd like to make a couple of comments along the line of Virgil's story. I was on a radio show in January, and we had two very interesting call-ins from people who were military personnel, and they would not give their real names. They gave aliases, and I later got a chance to meet with them. I've become very good friends with one of them who spent 7 years in the military. He was in Desert Storm, and he had seen UFOs and talked about them off the record. And saw one shot down actually by our military north of Atlanta. And he was on guard duty from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning, and he said he stood there like this for about, you know, 3 hours. He said he just was so riveted he couldn't even move to do his rounds. And then he eventually he saw three F-16s who approached the craft in a classic attack deployment, which is, if this is the craft, the two planes go towards the target, and then they veer off at a 45-degree angle to pull the target's attention. And then as soon as the target swivels, another F-16 comes from behind and hits it. And he actually saw this. And the other military fella who has now vanished, I think he is totally freaked out that he shared this with us, off the record. It was not in the radio transcript, which is interesting because the first fella was called in 2 months later to his CEO's office, and the guy, of course, had taken off his name badge. You know, this is like standard procedure, and he had the entire radio transcript this thick of the 3 hours, and he put it under this guy's nose and said, "You shouldn't be talking to people like this. What are you doing calling up?" I mean, he used an alias first name. It's like, how do they know this? So anyway, the second guy who has vanished told us that he was stationed down, I think it was Nicaragua, I'm pretty sure that's where this was, and he watched the destruction of a alien craft with a huge boom, and he said he believes it was a small nuclear tip missile that destroyed it. And he was one of seven men that was put on the cleanup team. And so they were, you know, he didn't know what he was cleaning up. I mean, he's not knowledgeable about UFOs at all. He was just doing what he was told. And it was a huge, you know, 10 acres or more that all this debris was spread over, and he was cleaning up, and he came upon this little chair, and it was kind of turned part way away from him, and he saw this little being in the chair, And he said he just sort of stopped, like, you know, and he was so paralyzed. He thought, is this a joke? I mean, his brain just almost stopped working because it was so far out of his reality. And he was about 6 feet away, and he saw that the little guy was still alive. And the military commander came up to him and said, son, you know, why don't you go back there and I'll take care of this. And he watched the commander kneel down next to the little guy and inject him with something, which killed him immediately. And then the next thing that happened was they were all in a helicopter with a body bag going back, and then they were put on a plane, and then they were taken to Area 51 and debriefed for 2 weeks. Basically, they said, you know, what do you, they would say, what did you see? Well, I thought, no, you didn't. What did you see? Till eventually, you know, they, okay, I don't see anything. I didn't hear anything. I don't know anything. But he called up to tell us this incident. So there's a lot going on out there. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, it definitely is coming forward. I think all, Virgil, Drew, Fred, even Stanton, even though he's from physicist land, scientists have the...
So anyhow, we're going to end right here for the day. We're running out of time. We'll continue this one as a backstop for the next deal. So see you next Friday night. Talk to everybody in a bit. Bye.